Turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 2. Ecclesiastes chapter 2. I know Kelly challenged Bible class to read a chapter from the book of Proverbs every day this month. And Ecclesiastes is another wonderful wisdom book. If you've never studied it, we will be looking at quite a few passages from this particular book. We're beginning an 8-lesson series. I mentioned that a little bit earlier. I'm excited about this series. I'm excited about the book that I'll be preaching from. Of course, it's based on Scripture. It's based on the book of Ecclesiastes. It's based on a lot of things in life. But overall, we're going to be talking about overcoming overload. I guess if you were going to subtitle my lesson this morning, it is Tired of Being Tired. All right, so we're just tired of being tired. How many of you guys like to go to the gym and work out? All right, quite a few. I don't go to the gym very often. When I do go to the gym, we have one in our house. I have a treadmill, and I love to run on the treadmill. Number one, because I used to love to run all the time. Karen, of course, reminds me, not since we've been married, kind of a deal. But when I was younger, I ran all the time, and now I run very little because my knee is not so great. That's why I like running on a treadmill. You know exactly what you get every single time. But it's funny to me because you go to a gym and you see these folks, and they get some of them have headphones on. Some of them are watching television, and I don't know about you, but I don't like to just walk on a treadmill. I like to run on a treadmill. I mean, I like to get after it, and it's even funner to not embarrass yourself by going flying off the back end because, you know, if you slow down, you're going off, right? And so you just crank it up, and you go faster and faster and faster, and I love to watch people just run and run and run and run. And it occurred to me one day, I'm sitting there, and I'm lifting weights, and it's the last time Karen and I went to the gym together, and I'm watching this guy, and I mean, he is... Every just little bit, he's turning it up faster and faster. And I'm thinking, that's probably how I look. And then you realize you are going nowhere. Think about that for a second. I mean, you're running as fast as you possibly can. And I get the fact that you're getting exercise. But in reality, you're not going anywhere. You're just standing there running. And to me, that is symbolic of life in America at times. People are going as fast as they can possibly go, and some people are listening to music, watching TV, watching people lift weights, doing everything they can possibly do while they're running, and they're going nowhere. There's no purpose necessarily to the direction they're running. They're just running, all right? And so we keep running, don't we? For weeks and months and years, we just keep running. Our lives are just going, and yet we might stop for a second and go, you know, I'm not going anywhere. I haven't made any strides toward any particular goal. If there's a term describing how people in America feel on a daily basis, Farrar writes, it's the word overload. Overload reminds us of the weights of everyday life. Overload is just another word for overwhelmed. Overwhelmed. Sometimes we're just overwhelmed. Some people are overwhelmed by the pace of life. Life is just going by. Some are overwhelmed by the pressures of life, the things that are happening in our lives. And others are overwhelmed by the pain of life, right? We experience some pains. We experience some hurts. We experience some setbacks. And so some will say, hey, one of these may be more dominant than the other, the pace, the pressure, or the pain. One may be more dominant, but most of the time, all three of those are putting pressure on our daily lives. It's likely a combination. How many of you have heard the term 24/7? Oh, we've heard that term. We use it all the time. I listened for it this entire week and listened to guys talk about their jobs at the table. One in particular, a pretty young guy. His name was Tim, and his wife, his name was Callie. And I talked to Tim way more than I talked to Callie. He was a firefighter. She owned her own business. When he wasn't firefighting, he was helping her run her business. And I heard him say it at least 10 times. We're enjoying this trip, man, because we are so blitzed 24/7, all the time, going, 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 going. All we do is work. We work, we work, we work. We go, we go, we go, we go. Don't have any kids, but just talk about how much they enjoyed the week. And we use this term 24/7. What's interesting, if you go back and you watch I Dream of Jeannie, or Gilligan's Island, or any of these shows, go back to the 50s shows or 60s and 70s, even early 80s shows, and you won't see that, you won't hear or see that term used. Because it didn't start till the mid 80s. We didn't start 24/7, because 24/7 means nonstop. Things weren't open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That may shock some of you that are younger. All right. There was a day and time when things weren't opened on Wednesday nights. There was a day and time when things weren't open on Sundays. There was a day and time when we actually stopped and we didn't go nonstop. We didn't go 24/7. All right. And things were just a little bit different. Here's what's interesting. We live not only in a world of nonstop, but we live in a world of more. All right. This guy named Richard Swenson wrote the book Hurtling Toward Oblivion. This is what he writes. No matter where we look, it makes no difference. There's always more. No matter what topic we consider, there's always more. Obviously, there's more people, lots more people. There are more cars traveling more miles over more roads. There's more airplanes carrying more passengers on more flights. Fly out of Dallas-Fort Worth sometime soon. You know, you can see that all the time. There's more computers. There's more books. There's more magazines, all distributing more information. Lots more information. There are more businesses offering more services and making more products. There are more buildings, more restaurants, more medications, more telephones, more money. There are more activities, commitments, choices, decisions, more changes, more stress, more technology, more complexity. There is, in short, more of everything. Wherever we look, we are surrounded by more, always. Right? So he writes about this idea that we're just experiencing more. Here's interesting. In 1800, there were 1 billion people. All right? 1800. 1930, 130 years later, there's 2 billion people. So we go 130 years to get to 2 billion. Right? Then you look at 1960, 30 years later, 3 billion people. 1975, 15 years later, 4 billion people. 11 years later, 10 years later. You know, we have now 7.4 billion people more. And it's happening at a pace that we can't keep track of. Life expectancy worldwide. In 1955, this is worldwide. I'd love you to venture a guess. What was life expectancy worldwide, not in America, in 1955? Throw it out there. Huh? 48. 48 years old in 1955. That was life expectancy. In 1995, it jumped to 65 years. In 2014, 72 years. Life expectancy by the year 2050 is estimated to be 85 years. I'm excited. I'll be 88 in 2050. I mean, it's more, right? We get more life. We get more time. There were 62,000 new book titles and new editions every year in the United States as of the average in the last couple, two or three years. Kelly just wrote a book. Another one, right? Another book. New editions. The Physician's Desk Reference had 300 pages when it was first published in 1948. Now it has over 2,500. I mean, think about that for a second. A desk reference for ailments, physicians' needs. In 1978, the average grocery store had 11,000 products. Now over 30,000. More. All right? Do you think more is going to stop anytime soon? No, it's not. So if more's not going to stop, then we need to stop. We need to sit back and go, wait a minute. If it's just going to keep going faster and faster at a pace that no one can keep track of, at some point in time, we need to take responsibility and say, you know what? It's time to slow down. It's time to stop. It's time to come back and reassess our lives. So there's three lies I want to talk about very quickly this morning. Three lies that we need to understand. And I think that since Satan is the prince of this world, it's lies that the world put out for us and that we sometimes have a tendency to believe. So lie number one is you can have it all. Right? You can have it all. We know that's a lie. And even if you could have it all, where would you put it? Right? Now Jeremy's not here this morning. I was hoping Jeremy was going to be sitting there because their family, the Wadsworth family, own a storage unit business. And they do great because they sell hundreds upon thousands of storage buildings per year. Karen and I drove by a house here not very long ago, and I went, they have 6 buildings in their backyard. You know, they just keep adding because we have more stuff. What are you shaking your head for? Because you just said the other day, Hunter goes, we need to build another building. We have more stuff, right? He says, we have no place to work because the building that we built to work in is filled with stuff to make the stuff that we want to build, right? All of our tools and equipment, we have no room now to make the stuff because of all the equipment we have to make the stuff. Doesn't even make sense, right? But we do. We just want to keep going all the time. Where would you put it all? The book of Ecclesiastes, written by Solomon. He was as close as you can get to a guy that had it all. I want you to think about that for a second. Solomon had a lot of stuff. Solomon was a guy, if you think about for just a minute, who wrote several books. It's like God gave him the wisdom, which he did ask for. We know he kind of rubbed the magic genie lamp, and God says, what do you want? And he says, I'll take wisdom. Now, he had to be pretty smart, in my opinion, to ask for wisdom. He already had some wisdom, but he wanted more. God just threw the wealth and prosperity in as a signing bonus. Okay, he got all this extra stuff. But here's a guy who pretty much had it all. And God said, I want you to write a book warning everyone following you how stupid it is to keep chasing after stuff. So if you ever read the book of Ecclesiastes, notice some things about Solomon. He spent much of his life acquiring. He had homes, vineyards, wineries, greenhouses filled with exotic flowers, gorgeous gardens beyond imagination. He kept stables of horses. He also kept stables of women, 700 wives. Now, if 700 wives wasn't enough, he had 300 concubines. Now, I don't know about you. How would you like to remember all those anniversaries? Right? And remember all of those birthdays. What a wonderful life that must have been for Solomon. And Solomon didn't drink out of Dixie cups. 1 Kings chapter 10, verse 21 says that he drank out of goblets of gold. I mean, he had it all. Ecclesiastes 2:10 says, all that my eyes desired, I did not refuse them. That's what Solomon wrote. I can get everything. Turn to Ecclesiastes 2. 10 and 11, if you're not there yet. All right. Here's Solomon again, acquiring, getting, trying to find meaning in life. That was what Ecclesiastes is about. Trying to find meaning in life. He says this, I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my labor, and this was the reward for all my toil. Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless. A chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun. I think that's a perfect commentary on our lives. There's times when we're chasing, 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 and we're not chasing anything that matters. We're running on the treadmill. And it's like the proverbial, you know, carrot in front of the donkey, you know, walking pace, keeping things moving and never being able to achieve. That's kind of what Solomon is saying. 9 times in the book of Ecclesiastes, Solomon writes about chasing after the wind. 33 times when talking about fame and wives and stuff and power, he calls them meaningless. 42 times in the book, he says, wasting your time. It's a waste of time. Smartest guy who's ever lived, the most wise person that God has ever placed upon this earth and poured out all this wisdom, tells us, quit running on a treadmill. It's meaningless. You're chasing after the wind. So why do we think we run faster and faster? Why do we just, we're going to change our lifestyle. Kelly, if we turn that sign back around, talks about that circle, you know. I have these attitudes, I have these thoughts, and it leads to actions, and the actions lead to, and it leads to, and it leads to, and it's this full circle stuff. But until we're willing to change some things in our life, we're not going to get any kind of different results. If you're tired of being tired, then this series is for you. And I think it's for all of us. So lie number one is you can have it all. Right? And that is a lie. You can't. So quit trying to get it all. And lie number two is you can do it all. You know, I'll take care of it. I'll do it. I'll get it done. You know, learn how to say no. It took us a long time in ministry to say, no, I'm not doing that. Sorry, I'm not going to do it. Well, that's your job. No, it's not my job. It's your job now. You're the one that came up with a great idea. You go do it, right? That was one of my favorite things. I used to love when people, hey, I've got this wonderful idea. And I'm like, oh, really? And they were so excited and passionate about it. I'm like, that is the coolest idea ever. Will you head it up and I'll get some people to help you do it? And they're like, no, I just want you to do it. Like, it's just my idea. I want you to do it. It's like, oh, no. I'm going to learn how to say no. All right? It's important. You can't do it all. And instinctively, I think we know we can't do it all. But if we looked at our schedules, or maybe better yet, if we got somebody else to look at our schedules, they might not think that we think that that's true. Because we pile things into our schedules. And an outside observer would look and say, wow, that's craziness. Especially when it comes to our kids. Now, before you say, well, Mike, you're picking on us parents and our kids' schedules a lot, right? And I'm kind of trying to make sure I'm making eye contact with those of you that have kids. This is what Farrar writes, too. I believe a lot of this stuff. Kids go to school 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. They've got homework. They got piano lessons, karate lessons, or some kind of lessons. They got soccer team, right? They got softball. They got baseball. They have football. They have lessons. They have team sports, one or two games a week. You got practices going on. And that's only if they're in one sport and only on one team. We've all been there, done that. We've all been there and done that. Okay, hear this part. Farrar's going to say it. I'm going to read something from his book. Hear this part. Do not hear me say sports is bad and activities are bad. Don't hear me say that. I mean, Cameron, you love baseball. I know you did. I love playing everything under the sun. I loved it. We loved watching our kids play sports. Okay, so don't hear me say that I think that's bad, because I don't. In fact, going to the several games that we've gone to and watching everybody do what they do, love it. What I'm going to say, and I'm going to say it very loudly and very clearly, is if that is more important than God, you need to get out of it. You need to make sure that your kids are getting squared up to God in that relationship more important than they are getting squared up, getting their shoulder and their elbow right to hit that ball better. You know, we need to make sure that we have this balance. So yeah, let's keep our schedules clear enough for our children, especially for all of us, no matter how old we are, to find time with God. Here's what Farrar says. He says, a child with this schedule, and he's pointing up, talking about all the things that are going on, there's not time to play. And I love how he writes this. Kids don't play anymore. They're placed on organized teams with 30-something-year-old coaches who never made it athletically. Coaches driven to make sure these 8-year-olds win the league championship or break their little hearts trying. Right? Been there, done that? Kids don't have time to read. They don't have time to read biographies of great leaders. Yeah, right? You guys loved all those biographies. Oh, that's right. Never mind. Great leaders. All three of mine are like, what are you talking about? I grew up reading biographies of great leaders. They don't have time to draw or build stuff with Legos anymore. They don't have time to be creative. They don't have time to enjoy family or work through issues of conflict. The average American child is overwhelmed by the schedule that's been set for them. Okay, the average American child. And that's the schedule for one kid. Imagine when you double or triple the schedule. So here's the point. What about dinner at home? You know, what about playing catch, right, with your child? Not with the baseball team. And we've been there and done that where, we're playing catch, but we're playing with everybody else. When's there time to talk about God? When's there time to talk about eternal things? That's what Farrar's book is about. That's what Ecclesiastes is about. Because at the very end of Ecclesiastes is where Solomon says, the end of the matter, all has been heard. Fear, all has been heard. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. Okay, that's the purpose of man. So, it doesn't necessarily get much better at retirement. How many of you guys retired and found yourselves pretty busy? Right? My folks, when they retired, were busier than they ever were. They were overwhelmed and overloaded, couldn't say no. Everybody says, we got all the time in the world. What else are you going to do? Go get this done. Go get that done. I had to tell my own parents, will you learn how to say no and just tell people, you go do that. You know, you don't have to do everything. So we believe this. We believe this lie that you can have it all. We believe this lie you can do it all. And here's what I'm asking you to think about this morning. Just stop for a second. Slow down. Look at your schedule and ask yourself this question. Why are we doing what we're doing? Why are we doing what we're doing? Is there a reason for me to do that? I mean, is there a reason I just keep turning the treadmill up? And you say, well, that's for the exercise of it all. I get that. But can you get that same exercise doing something else? Maybe you can get that exercise with your husband or wife, or with your brother or sister, or people that you care about, with your own children. I mean, can you get that? Look at the reason that you do what you do. And here's lie number three. You deserve it all. I mean, think about that. You deserve a break today. Isn't that a great McDonald's thing? You deserve a break. You deserve it. You deserve it. Most people believe this lie, and I know they do, because they'll work hard at making sure they get what they deserve. In fact, I know some folks who think they deserve it all so much that they'll step on or blast anybody else that's in their way of them getting what they deserve. A good example of that might be Black Fridays. Maybe they're not as big of a deal as they used to be, but we've all heard the stories. You know, the doors open, they run over grandmas. You know, somebody trips and falls and everyone's like, I don't care, I'm getting the TV, you know. And they stomp over them, or they get into fights over it. And you're like, what is that madness? We have never done a Black Friday. And my sister has. She's like, oh, I got this deal and that deal. And I got up at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, that's just, and there's no way I'm doing that. It's not worth it to me. But they think they deserve it all, so therefore they deserve that TV, or they deserve that stereo, or they deserve whatever it is. I think it's horrible. Farrar writes about a woman who divorces her husband against the counsel of the pastor, against the counsel of the church. And in the book he says, here's what happened. They lived at such a breakneck pace because they wanted it all. They wanted it all for themselves, and they wanted it all for their kids. The father took an extra job to make sure that the kids got everything that they needed, and that the wife could stay at home. And then she started taking on part-time work. And he goes on to tell the story that because of work and commitments and activities and life, that they had created no time for one another. There was no time for each other. And there was no time to nurture their relationship with the Lord by ever reading and praying together and spending time together. And so it was go, 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 go from early in the morning until late at night. So Farrar writes this: when our lives get so busy, we have no time for God and His truth, we become vulnerable to believing the lies. I think that is powerful and strong. I think that is right on. So we're going to talk about some of those things and how we can take time to breathe and how we can take time to slow down. How many of you guys have a time in the lives of your kids where you say, okay, 30 minutes, can't do anything? You got one of those? No? Do you want one of those? Think about it. How would you like 30 minutes of just nothing? It would be horrible. You know, that's funny, because when we started doing camp years ago, we put 30 minutes of quiet time into the schedule at camp. Their response, the kids were like, what? And we're like, 30 minutes quiet time. Just go to a quiet place, read your Bible, pray, you know. And some of the kids, oh, you got to be kidding me. And the youngest ones were the ones who said, as that started happening, after the first year, we started asking teenagers, hey, what was your favorite part of camp? Oh, that quiet time. Just having a moment. So, in fact, we elongated naps. I see you kind of nodding your head. We put naps in, and we said, we're going to add a little time to nap time. And the youngest kids were like, oh, you got to be kidding me. You're going to tell me I have to take a nap. All the high school kids were like, you ever get rid of nap time, we'll kill you. Right? They love nap time. Right? Because the older you get, the more mature you get, the more you're supposed to realize, hey, I want to slow down. So the counselors were like, oh, we love quiet time. And I said, you know what? Here's the deal. The purpose of camp is to say, wow, this is going to be the most incredible week of your life, but don't forget to take some of that home with you. You know, that discipline of slowing down and letting the pace of life, you know, just turn the treadmill off. You know, fake it in slow motion. Whatever you got to do to slow down, I want to encourage you to breathe. And you can ask me later on what Epicureanism is, and I'll tell you. But Epicureanism says, be sensuous, enjoy yourself. Education says, be resourceful, expand yourself. Materialism says, be satisfied, please yourself. Psychology says, be confident and fulfill yourself. Pride says, be superior and promote yourself. Humanism says, be capable, believe in yourself. And God says, be wise, humble yourself. And God says, you know, I want you to take time. One of the lessons we'll talk about is this idea of needing a Sabbath. And I know y'all have had some lessons in the past in regards to that. But I want to take a piece of that and mainly from Farrar's book. But I want us to think about what it means to humble ourselves. You know, ATMs are open 24/7. I mean, we use it all. I say it all the time. ATMs. What does ATM stand for? Anybody know? Automated teller machine. I almost said transfer. I'm trying to think of my own. I changed ATM up. So I want us to have a spiritual 24/7. Right? We can access our funds. We can access our accounts. We can access information 24/7. I can go to it anytime I want to, and I can get money out. That's what an ATM is, right? An automated teller machine. But even in this culture, sometimes we forget that God has an ATM machine. Right? And I'm going to call it the absolute truth message. ATM. It's an absolute truth message. You can go to it anytime you want to. Open your Bible and read it, and you can take a deposit out. Right? Withdraw. Just withdraw from His wisdom, withdraw from His power, withdraw from His love, withdraw, withdraw, withdraw. Anytime you want. ATM's open all the time. 24/7. God created us, and He designed us with a longing. I believe this with all my heart. A longing for happiness and love. He created us for happiness and love. It was part of the creation, right? And so the problem in our culture is not the longing for happiness. That's not the problem, because God created the longing. So the problem is not in the longing for happiness or the longing for love. The problem is where you go to find it. See, God's the creator, and so God says, hey, I want to give you this new heart. I want to give you this love. I want to give you this abundant perisos zoe, this abundant, amazing life. I want to give it to you, okay? But you're only going to find it by going to the ATM, right? The absolute truth message is the only place you're going to find it. Don't believe the lies of the world. Believe what God says. So here's the next 7 weeks. We're going to talk about lesson next week. You need a Sabbath. You need a sanctuary. You need sustenance. Lesson 4, you need supplication. Lesson 5, you need to simplify. Lesson 6, you need a sovereign. And lesson 7, you need a savior. Okay? I love how Farrar uses all of those S's in there. And it's probably because the essence of our life is going to work into these lessons. So I hope you look forward to them as much as I do. In conclusion, Matthew 11, 28 through 30, Jesus says, come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Right? That's a bigger word than taking a nap. Okay? It's a bigger word than 30 minutes of quiet and solitude. But that works into exactly what Jesus is offering. Peterson in the Message says this: are you tired? Are you worn out? Burned out on religion? Come to me. Get away with me and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real test. Walk with me. Just like we talked about this morning, walk in the light. Walk with me. Work with me. Watch how I do it. I love Peterson's rendition of that. Pay attention to what Jesus did. Look at this absolute truth message and the messages that God has given us through Christ. And He says, I'll teach you how to live life. I'll teach you how to live perisos zoe, this abundant life, because it's really important. Maybe you're needing something this morning. We have an invitation that we always offer.